Hi, I'm Samuel, and this is Duty. Have you signed up for the launch of There's an Alien in My Toilet on Kickstarter? I hope that you do. It's gonna be a hilarious ride. The link is in the summary. See you there.
What's up, Judge? What's going on in the House of Craze tonight?
In the House of Craze tonight, we have the creator of Dog Eaters, Mr. Malcolm Wong. He's coming up next, and we're going to be talking about what is the topic for today, Sam? It is remastered. We're going to be talking about that. So that's coming up next.
Bam. Let's get it.
The only show for independents all around, giving you a platform to spread your word all over town. Cast the Craze is the place to promote to your fans with the dream of Medina and Sam the Crazy Man. Subscribe to our show and never miss an episode. It's time to get your meds, listen to us on the go. Updated every week, we never miss a day. Join the squad, come on in, it's time to cast the Craze. If you are an independent,
cast the Craze!
Making moves on your own,
cast the Craze!
On your grind in the streets,
cast the Craze!
Join the movement,
cast the Craze!
Yeah, George, we did it again. Come on now. Now you want to do it. Cast the Craze. Welcome to Cast the Craze Podcast. I'm your host with the most, Sam the Crazy Man Vera. And I am with
George the Dreamer Medina. What's happening, everybody? Welcome to another exciting episode of Cast the Craze. It is February 18th, and today on the show we have Mr. Malcolm Wong. He's the creator of Dog Eaters, and the book is being published, I believe, through AP Comics UK, which is Paul Hayden's company. Big shout out to him. He's got a new campaign out right now, Friend of Foe, which is why I had the little mask on, hooking my man up. But yeah, so we have an exciting episode today. We're going to be talking about Remastered, and we got a lot of stuff going on that I'm going to let Sam talk to you a little bit about, because it's February 18th.
Yes.
February 18th. That means that we are 3 days in, which, okay, so wait, before you go.
See what happened was.
So that opening, if you signed up to the page, they better have signed up to the page and they better be legend already. But anyway, yeah, no, what's that? And it's Sam. Oh, don't forget to subscribe. Go ahead.
What you got? That opening, what? Pledge.
What?
Pledge.
Yes.
Pledge. Pledge. Today.
Pledge.
There you go.
Pledge. Subscribe to the channel.
Yes.
Make sure you hit the like button, comment below.
Oh, that's right. That opening.
That other stuff.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Back it up. I just had to change that one to pledge. So what's happening? What's happening? We're in the middle of the campaign. I can't tell you where we are. I'm hoping that we're in a good spot. I mean, as of the recording of this episode, we have 80 people who signed up, 80 dudesters who signed up. As of the recording of this episode, we had one entry into get featured in Jizzing in My Toilet. And this is by Rodesco. He sent his version of Duty. So send us your best versions of Duty. Remember, get as close to Duty as possible. You know, I don't care how you brand it, whether it's you want to use your superhero's costume, whatever, but you know, it's the Duty. So enter to be featured. You only have to do is post it, tag Catch the Craze, and hashtag I am a dudester. That's it. And you do that, you can get featured in the book. So you get an opportunity to get featured. So that's exciting.
Yeah. No, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. So right now, because it is February 18th, the campaign is already live. So hopefully you guys have already pledged. And if you haven't, please go to the link down in the show notes.
Yep.
There it will take you right to the campaign. It's Duty is back. There's an alien in my toilet. It is
Duty
back.
Does what and, Duty does.
That's right. And it is remastered. But you know what? This is, I mean, we do so many live shows now to promote, you know, our friends, you know, our fellow indies, live campaigns on Kickstarter, Indiegogo, that we are pre-recording this show. So let's talk a little indie news, Sam. What's up? You want to talk a little indie news?
I'll give you some news.
Listen, the cat's out of the bag, son. Yes, so the campaign is live. It's Nailing My Toilet. That's indie news right now. Yes. So make sure you hit the link. Go pledge to the campaign. Sam's got a lot of cool stuff. If you guys saw the show on Wednesday, you already know. On Tuesday, I should say. Wait, Wednesday or Tuesday? The 15th. Yes. You guys already know it was Tuesday. You guys already know what's going on. We had a blast.
Oh.
The production value of that show was incredible. Sam went all out. We have tons of stuff on the campaign available already, right? You have Batman covers, right?
We have varied covers, sketch
vinyl
covers.
Vinyl toys. Give them the list, Sammy. Give them
latex
the list.
Latex figure. We have a plush doll. We got trading cards, a coloring book, a guidebook. We got stickers. We got a t-shirt. We have original art. We have wood art, custom wood art, decorative pieces for your wall.
Ooh.
We got it all. It all is that. Crazy.
All Yay! Of that. There's that kid. There's that kid. Yes, so we have that going on. So make sure that you get on there and pledge to the campaign. Hopefully, I mean, I don't know. We can't look into the future, but hopefully by now the campaign has reached its goal. It's been funded, and you know, now we're into stretch goals because there's a lot of
retail bundles, there's educator bundles. If you're in the education system and you're trying to get kids to want to have fun learning, Duty does that well. And so we have trivia, we have crossword puzzles, we have a lot of activities in the book. So great way to get kids to read and learn at the same time.
That's right. What else is in the news? Oh, I want to give a big shout out to Mr. Jerry Winsborough, who's been a huge supporter.
Huge
supporter.
His campaign is going on, right?
Of Indy. Yeah, his campaign is live right now for a book he's got called what is it?
Dog Eaters.
No, that's
not that. Dog Eaters. No, sorry. Violent Dogs.
Violent Dogs. Sorry, Jerry. Yeah, Violent Dogs. So make sure you
everybody got a dog. I'm just saying.
Make sure you go and hit the button on that campaign. We had him on the show last week. He was talking about it. And his campaign is live right now. So please go out there and support Jerry. Yes. He's got amazing, amazing work. His books are incredible. He had a book called Seek that was also funded through Kickstarter, and it was amazing. So I can't wait to read this one. So big shout out to him. That's also in Indie News. And what else you got? What else you got, Sam, in Indie News?
Let's see. What do we got else? The tour, the podcast tour. I mean, you'll find Duty is going to be a guest on 24 podcasts. And they're just crazy. It's just crazy right now. So I thought I uploaded that podcast tour promo, but there's 24 podcasters out there that invited Duty to talk about his trip from Uranus to Earth. So that's going to be fun and exciting. So you want to check it out and support their shows. Sign up. Some of them are audio streaming platforms and some of them are YouTube channels. So just subscribe, follow, like. You know, these are guys that are dedicating their time to the independent community. So I appreciate them and what they do, and whatever platform they're on, I signed up and I support it as well. So, Duty and I, not just a guest, we also support those platforms.
That's right. We're actually on the 23rd next week. We're going to be on Indie Comics Relay. So they're going to come on our show. And after our live show, we're going to be on their live show.
Yeah, it's a double whammy.
On Wednesday. So you guys want to check that out. That's going to be a lot of fun. Big shout out to those guys. They also have their own books and they're supporting other indies. So I love that, man. I love when indies support indies. So make sure you go there and you subscribe to all of their channels. Sam's got the podcast tour on his Instagram handles. You can go to Catch the Craze or Art of Samuel V or There's an Alien in My Toilet. All of those will have that schedule up for you. So you guys can check that out. So yeah, so that's what's going on there. Oh, and also, so my book will be coming out.
That's right. Wonder Duck.
But my pre-launch campaign for The Adventures of Wonder Duck is live right now. So if you guys haven't yet, please go sign up to the page. It'll be in the show notes as well. And for those that sign up early, I have some goodies.
Candyman. Tell them what you give them. Goodies.
So if you sign up for the campaign, for the pre-launch campaign right now, and you let me know that you signed up. So you go to The Adventures of Wonder Duck, follow that, and send me a DM. and you tell me, hey, I'm following the campaign, I will then send you a PDF of an 8x10 print that is going to be exclusive to those who are following the campaign early. Right. It's not going to be available on the campaign. It's just going to be available for you. Once the campaign goes live, and if you do decide to pledge, I will then send you a printed 8x10 copy of that print as a thank you for being there since day one. So that's what's going on with the Adventures of Wonder Duck. And thank you. Thank you all for already, you know, signing up. So yeah, it's exciting. We got some good stuff coming down the pike, Sam.
Yeah, some good stuff. I did send in my application for the Dallas Fan Expo.
Nice.
It brings in, I forgot the 60,000 people. 60,000. It's crazy. Yeah. So I just signed up for Dallas Fan Expo. That's going to be in June.
Father's Day weekend.
Yeah, and I'm actually looking at a RetroCon, which is just 15 minutes from my home.
Oh,
and,
good.
in Texas. It's a retro. It's like ZoloCon.
Oh, nice.
It's a RetroCon. It's a collectible. And I was like, oh, wait, this would be perfect for. So I just submitted that to hopefully do that sometime next month.
Sweet.
So that'll be cool.
Nice. And speaking of ZoloCon, our buddy, Jonathan the Psycho Syphax, will be at ZoloCon this year. So if you guys are going to ZoloCon, make sure you look up Jonathan Syphax.
If I was on the East Coast, I would have done it. You know, I like it out here in Texas. I don't have to worry about all these damn restrictions that you have out there on the East Coast. So
keep everybody safe.
I'll stick to Texas and Florida. I'm good. And but
hold on before. So I just want to finish. So with John, make sure you check out Jonathan. He's got a book called The Lesson. And he also has a book called Futurescope Showcase. Yes. So show the man some love. If you are in that area, if you go to ZoloCon, look for Jonathan Syphax at that show. Yeah, now go ahead, Sammy. So yeah, if you were here in the West East Coast, you totally would.
I would have definitely done ZoloCon. I did the math. It doesn't make sense for me to do it. I was going to do it this year. And just didn't pay because the distance between the airport and the event, I would have to rent the car to get there. It's about an hour drive from the airport to the event center, then get a hotel in that area. When I did the math, I was like, I would have to do this much, and there's no guarantee, even though I was very successful last year, and I made back everything I spent for the show. I just didn't want to take that chance. So I was like, you know what? I'll pass on it this year, maybe next year. And I'll make a decision as to what happens after this campaign. What would I do for the rest of the show? Right now, I'm just looking localized.
Yeah, because MegaCon is a real possibility. Maybe going out to MegaCon in Florida, depending on what happens. So we'll keep you guys posted and see what's going on. So we have Malcolm in the green room waiting to come on. But before we get him on, why don't we move on to get your meds and talk a little remastering, Sam. Let's do that.
So it's a time that I need to, because I do need some medicine because I am feeling a little queasy.
It's time for your medicine.
Remastered. What do you mean by remastered?
So a few months ago, we had a topic on the show about, you know, revamping. And,
right. You
know, when you have a story that maybe you worked on, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, and now you decide to bring it back and, you know, re-release it or whatever, we tend to revamp stories or rewrite or whatever, right? Now we're talking about remastering, new terminology. Let's talk about remastering. What do we mean by remastering, Sam?
I equate it to when, perfect example, when you have like a vintage film, right? So say like a film from the 80s that was on a VHS, right? And so, you know, it doesn't translate well to the new era of digital, right? So they had to, you remaster it. So you enhance the coloring, you retouch it. You know, you enhance the audio quality, you retouch it. So it's just bringing it up to a new, giving it new life. It's like your clothing that you donated because you outgrew it and not stylish anymore. You know, you can't wear those loafers anymore. So you need to have some Italians, right? So it's just changing the outfit, setting the table, and it's just adding, bringing it to the forefront. You know what I mean? That's what I look at for remastering. It's not redoing.
Right.
It's remastering. It's touching it up.
It's true. Because if you think about, say, for example, you know, you grew up watching a movie like, I don't know, Predator, right? Predator from the 80s. And it was on VHS, right? But in order to get it into like a DVD quality, or maybe even, I don't even know if they have it in Blu-ray, they would have to remaster it, is what you said, right? They would have to enhance the image to so that it, you know, so it looks better on screens of today, right? And so it's perfect example, because what we're doing now is, for example, with the adventures of, I mean, with the with There's an Alien in My Toilet, the book is being remastered. It's not being rewritten, redrawn, anything like that. It's not being revamped, I guess, in a sense. It's being remastered. And it's funny how we can equate remastering in comics, and we can make it similar to in movies, because it was recolored, right? The colors were changed. Right. It was relettered to make it sound better, right? The right. lettering is like the sound of a movie, right? So we remastered that.
Right.
Nothing changed as far as dialogue and as far as that kind of stuff. The only thing that changed was really just the look, the way it aesthetically looks. So, you know, I mean, for those who are going to be getting it, obviously. So if you look at the first page, for example.
Right. That's all being remastered.
That's different. That's different. And if you go to the campaign, you will see that that first page has changed, because you have some samples on the campaign now. Yes. So you can see how it's being remastered.
Yes.
Now, the question for everybody out there, what do you think about the term remastered? Do you think it's something that, after 10 years or so, should you do that to your comic if you want to bring it back out? Classic at that point? You're kind of messing up the classic.
I think it all depends. I think what happens is, I think with our specific example is, when we released it, it was to a different audience at a different time, in a small scale. That will go in on a bigger scale. Only a small handful of people, a collective, a little over 1,000 people or more, have the physical copies, right? So it wasn't really crazy, unless they have the graphic novel, but the graphic novel was in grayscale anyway. So that's different. But so now if we're reintroducing it, you look at the colorist today, the coloring, the level, the quality of the colorist today are so far advanced that they were back then. Right. And there's a look and there's a feel to specific genres of books that people are expecting. Right. So when you look at a book and you say, you know what, if I'm reintroducing this to the market, I can't, they're not going, there's going to be some criticism if you left it the original way, because that was a different time. It was like 80s bell bottoms, you know, versus, you know, today. Right. So you have to be able to adapt to the environment and be able to attract that audience that are looking for, maybe because this is a younger, all ages book, they're looking for vibrancy, right? They're looking for bold, right? So there's a specific template that you have to have in order to attract that customer. So I think, yes. And then it calls for remastering because you're reintroducing something in a bigger scale. So you have to look at it with a critical eye in order to be able to try to attract the market that you're trying to go after, target.
See, I think that when you remaster something, we as indies, right? As indies, I think we have more liberties in that department. One, because as an indie, you know, you start off as an indie and you're not necessarily a professional, so to speak. I mean, some indies are professionals. What I'm saying is, speaking for me, when I started working on this book for you, when I was lettering that book for you, you know, 15 years, whatever, it was 2005, I can't even do math right now, over 15 years ago, my skill level of lettering has changed from that point till now. So for me, it's in my best interest to me, if you're re-releasing a book that has my lettering in it, and I'm saying lettering, no, my lettering in it, it is in my best interest to put my best foot forward and say, hey man, let me redo that, because there were a lot of amateur mistakes in the book that shouldn't be in the book if you're re-releasing it today. And so if we are bringing it back out, let me remaster it, let me redo it and enhance it so that it is better, because we've evolved as creators. I think that that is something that we can do as indies. I don't think that you know, a comic book from Marvel or DC from 1972 should be remastered, right?
They're not going to change
the coloring because
they're going to reinterpret the story with a new artist like they do with the films. You know, I mean, how many times did they release Superman and tell the damn backstory every single damn time? Can you tell a new story of Superman? You're driving me nuts, right? So I think I think it all depends, you know, and again, this is a very unique example because when we were true independents back then in the early 2000s, right?
We folded these things in half and cut them ourselves.
Yes, you know, so, and now, you know, we have retailers interested in carrying the product. You know, we have a national interest with this, was in our best interest to package it right. So that way, you know, there's a level of quality that they're going to expect from this. And mind you, it's an all ages. It's not going to be a Marvel-esque book. You know, it's in the lines of Marvin the Martian. It's in the realm of Invader Zim, you know. So we're targeting that audience that loves just slapstick humor, you know, funny cartoon style. And so we want to make sure that we complement our predecessors as we add to the tree of growth in the artistic realm.
Yeah, I think we owe it to our fans to put our best foot forward because we're indies and because we're under a bigger microscope than say the big two.
They can
put anything on a page and it's going to sell, and they're going to say, that's Marvel, that's DC. Whereas us, they're looking for a reason not to buy a book, and not everybody. I'm sure there's a lot of people who support indies, but a lot of people support indies and they do. But there are a lot of people who also question, hey, am I going to see a second issue? Should I put any money into this product? Is it going to be worth the read when I open it up and actually get home and read it? What is it going to look like? It's going to have typos, misspellings. The fonts are all different. You know what I mean? Like, there are just certain things that shouldn't be in a book when you're paying for it. Are they going to get that? So all of that, we're under a lot of that.
Yes, believe me, because I do What's in the Box every Thursdays. And, you know, we talk behind the scenes on some of these books where I'm like, the font gets smaller and smaller as I turn the page. And I'm like, I'm like, what's going on? Or the size of the font changes, or the type of the font changes. And it goes from Comic Sans to, you know, Arial. I'm like, why are they changing the fonts? And then you have miniature font in a really oversized balloon. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And I think that's the stuff that we are pay a lot of attention to make certain that
those mistakes. And that's the whole thing. We've made those mistakes. And some of those mistakes were made in the book. Yeah. You know, when I look at some of that stuff in the book, I'm like, damn. Those tails on that word.
Those tails were horrible.
Like this big,
those tails
like,
were horrible.
How fat are those things? Yo, we got to redo this because I know better. Yeah. You know, you can't put that back out there. So it is. I think as indies, we got to put our egos aside.
Yes.
And say, look, I've evolved. I've become a better artist, writer, letterer, inker, you know, colorist.
Right.
It's okay for me to redo whatever I have to do. I'm not saying change your story. You know, like if you believe in your story, keep your story. I'm saying aesthetically, if you can make that better somehow, whether it's the letter, lettering, I think, and I'm not saying this because I letter, I'm just saying lettering, I think is so, we don't look at how important that is.
It's extremely important.
Right? Sometimes
which is why I don't do it.
We forget how important that is because it's almost like it needs to be there for you as part of the comic. It needs to be there, but it also needs to disappear on the page. So you have to see it without seeing it. You know what I mean? Like,
that's a compliment the page.
Yes. And so, you know, but when it's done wrong, you can see it.
I was like, wait, where's the art? All I see is bubbles.
It's the first thing you see.
So there was a book that I featured on Once in a Box. And I was like, you covered up all the art. All I see is balloons everywhere. I was like, oh, this must be a writer who never wrote a comic book, and he probably just micromanaged the process and wanted his words to overwhelm the audience. He should have just wrote a prose instead of a comic book because the dialogue was everywhere, and he paid for an artist who just wasn't showcased because it was just hidden behind bubbles. Yeah. It was crazy, you know.
And that's something you got to be mindful too when you're writing a comic book. The dialogue, how much dialogue is going to fit in this panel? Is it going to cover the art? You know.
Yes. For the novice letterers out there, go to blambot.com. Blambot has a great tutorials on how to properly letter a page.
Fonts, tutorials,
where the placement of the balloons, you know, you know, all these things that
and fall. Why?
Yes.
Why?
Yeah. And like George said, put your ego aside. Go over to Blambot. Don't listen to us. We don't know what we're talking about. Go to Blambot. Pros. That's who we defer to. It's like, all right, let me go check these guys out. You know, but I'm smart enough to know that, look, I don't like to letter. I'm not good at lettering. George is, you know, and George, you know, brings the story to life with his lettering. And so for me, it's, you know, you got to know your limitations. And I think the best thing an independent can do is get an editor, because you got a second set of eyes that's going to direct you and is going to make sure that, that the final piece is ready, is press ready. So, you know, you want to take that burden off your shoulders, because I know you have the, you want to have the final say in everything. Get an editor, pay for it. And you'll be happy at the end, because they're going to help protect your product. Because sometimes you don't see what's right in front of you because you have blinders on, you know, and I think that's what it is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, no, that's a great topic. I mean, listen, guys, you know, feel free to go into the chat down below and just let us know what you think about the topic, remastering a comic book. If you have a book that's been remastered, let us know, put it on the comments there. We'll check it out. Take a look at that thing. Yeah.
Yes. So with that said, that was that, you know, we're going to go to commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to bring in Malcolm Wong and talk about, Dog Eaters.
Yes, sir.
It's going to be crazy because, I mean, it's just sick. I just can't wait to talk about it. So we're going to play a trailer for Violent Dogs, and we're going to come back and start the convo. Bring the man.
Very cool.
Welcome.
Hey, what's going on? How you doing, Malcolm? Well, Malcolm, welcome. Welcome to the show. I am George. That is Sam. Thank you for coming on Catch the Craze. This is Malcolm Wong, everybody. And he is the creator of Dog Eaters. Now, thank you for being on the show, Malcolm. Now, where are you located? Where are you?
I'm in Nakanoku in Tokyo. For those who are anime and manga people, Nakano Broadway is a mecca for this stuff. There's all kinds of that kind of, you know, manga and anime kind of stuff. Of course, there's Akiba too as well. That's another part of Tokyo where these freaks go. But Nakano Broadway, you know, has it's a mecca, and there's like cell animations. There's kind of risque figurines. There's the guy, he's a famous Japanese artist. He has a couple galleries there. Super flat, based on anime and stuff like that. It's very so Nakano, it's kind of a good place.
Yeah, Malcolm, you're making me. I want to go to Tokyo already. I want to go to Japan already. You're making me want to go even more, man. That sounds incredible. Now, so for those who don't know who you are, just give us a quick introduction as to who Malcolm Wong is, where you grew up. Obviously, you've told us a little bit about it, but tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm a third generation Chinese American. My descendants or whatever came to America over 100 years ago. So that gives you a slight idea of my age. I'm actually older than I look. That's what everybody says.
Malcolm is like he's like 205 years old.
And born in Baltimore, elementary through high school in Boston area. Mm. 2 years at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Moved to Hilo College in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Then to Honolulu, where I got a master's in sculpture. Did my thesis in film. Mm. Went to Osaka and Tokyo. Did music videos for 10 years. Wow. And started writing when a fortune teller told me, I was like, hey, you know, what should I do in the future? I'm doing music, I'm doing film, I'm doing video. And then she said, you should write. So I wrote a couple novels. I got representation in New York and London, never published. Okay. Probably fortunate, I think, because the morality of it was a bit too sexual and violent. And I think, you know, it was a Jay McInerney had already done, kind of at the same time, they'd kind of done that. And it was, that's kind of not great for the planet, I think. So thankfully, probably, you know, if I'd gone that route, I'd probably be dead from drugs or something. And so writing novels, and then I had a motorcycle accident, and wow, one of my sons' fathers, who's a doctor, and we're going to international school, and came over, and I was talking to him, and he goes, hey, my mother is a script supervisor. She's, you know, worked with Spielberg and this kind of stuff. Turned it into a screenplay. So I wrote a screenplay, couple screenplays, and Dog Eaters won 3 awards at the Screenwriting Expo in LA. This is quite a while ago, actually. Mm-hmm. And one of the awards was the Dable Brothers Award. I'm not sure if you know the Dable Brothers. They were,
yes, we had them on our show.
Yeah.
So you know a bit about them. I know a bit more about them. So what happened there was David, which is the third brother, or actually the fourth or fifth brother. There's Ernst and Les are the two. Les was the driving force behind that. And I think if people know about the Dable Brothers, their claim to fame was chasing George R. R. Martin for 2 years before they were able to get the rights to Hedge Knight, which is a prequel to Game of Thrones.
Right.
That was a huge hit, like 2000s. Right. I would say early 2000s.
Yes.
And so they turned that into like an amazing, calling card. It was just like all these fantasy writers, you know, they have the rights to Wheel of Time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Robert Jordan's. Yeah.
And I saw it when I went to New York Comic Con. There was a Chase, what's his name? I forget his name. This young black artist was doing character sketches. I mean, if they had only kept it together, and the problem with the Dable Brothers was, which I had heard on back then, it was forums, right? Comic forums.
Sure, yeah, that's how it was back then.
And it's like, hey, these guys are not paying their
artists.
Mm-hmm. And so this artist, Guillermo Angel from Chile, Santiago, well, he's from actually Santiago, and which is a kind of a beach town, I believe. And then he was like, his uncle had done some work for them. And so he was recommended, and I chose him. He was great. And I told him, he did 10 pages of roughs, pencils. And I said, send an invoice. Let's see what happens. Nothing.
Oh.
Nothing. So I said, at that time I had a little bit of money. So I said, I'm going to produce this thing and keep all the rights. It's my intellectual property, which is, you know, fantastic.
Important. Yeah.
So we just went through and did that. And, they did put out the first three issues. It was basically the prize was 6 floppies and then bind it into a graphic novel. And so when Dable Brothers, they went from one publisher to the next, like they ended up at Marvel. And
then Marvel severed them. I mean, they were Del Rey, they were like all kinds of places. When David came out, he goes, okay, I'm Sea Lion Books. So it's kind of like Fable Brothers, but it's not. And so we did come up with a cover.
Wow.
I heard you talking about
remastering.
Remastering.
Yeah.
And so when I did it as an independent.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
And I went into the forward and the afterward, the explanation of the story of this journey.
Right.
Is quite torturous, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's how we got from here to there. And then now through Lance Lucero, he hooked me up with Paul Hayden and ASAP in Anyone World. And this is kind of like, it feels very new.
Mm-hmm.
The way he's doing things, you know, the crowdsourcing, linking it with his son's disability and charities, and, you know, doing this kind of being linked to a larger society than just a comic kind of world. You know, it's more of a community, overall right. community thing.
Yeah,
I think it's really cool. So there's a kind of engagement there that is beyond. Just kind of a very niche thing, yeah. You know.
We had him on the show. It's fun because we had him on the show. We also had Lance mm-hmm. on the show as well. So we spoken to both gentlemen. Great guys, and you guys are doing amazing work. I mean, your book, Malcolm, that the pages inside of this book, and beautiful stuff, man.
Thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Yeah. Now you went through the whole journey, and it just it's incredible how things change and they don't change, right? Because as an independent creator, you're out there, you're trying to find a way to get your voice out there. Mm-hmm. And then there's always like, there always seems to be these roadblocks where like you think it's going to happen and then that happens. Talk to me a little bit about your writing, like as far as, because you said you wrote a couple of novels and you found some representation. When mm-hmm. you say representation, you talk about agents.
Yes, literary agents in New York and London as well. And Sheil Land in London is, they have also have a movie division. Mm-hmm. And they had a recent movie that was, I mean, I was surprised they were still in business, but you know, it was a very successful movie. I can't remember, off the top of my head, I can't remember. I should have, you know, referenced it, written mm-hmm. it down. But, you know, and then another one that, in New York, it was, you know, there was just too much, you know,
yeah,
much of that. But one of the prizes also for the Screenwriting Expo was representation through Kersey Management, which is a management company. So you have the big agencies like, you know, Creative, you know, the CCA and Endeavor and those places kind of like that in Hollywood, right? And then you have management. And management is sort of like, they're not agents. So they're able to, they're more like, they can pitch, but it's not like being with these, you know, like the superstar kind of things. Although these, you know, superstars do have lawyers, managers and agents,
right?
And you know, physical therapists and cosmetic surgeons and whatever, you know what I mean? They got everything. So you know, but that kind of stuff is very ephemeral. You know, if you don't hit immediately, you're gone. So things take you know, if things take too much time, they're on to the next. So yeah, right now I'm unrepresented.
Wow. So I noticed that you've moved a lot. Were any of your family in the military, or you just chose to move based on opportunity for education and for work?
Well, the first move, of course, my father changed his job. So we went up to the greater Boston area. And then from from Massachusetts to Hawaii was just like, I had to get out of the East Coast. I had to get out of Massachusetts, out of that.
Right.
I had to get out. And so I went. And that was, you know, the best thing I've ever done was go west, you know, go west, young man.
Right. The idea for Dog Eaters, where did that come from?
Well, that's, again, like what we're in now, the situation, the social situation we're now in, when I started writing this, I was really fed up with, you know, this is Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan. I mean, it's gone exponential since then. And also the Forever Wars, the, you know, George W. and, you know, this kind of thing. And it was just like, okay, this can't hold. This is not sustainable. So what happens when it all breaks down?
Right.
And so Dog Eaters is set 175 years after the die-off. So we're talking about some kind of complete catastrophe, which is not gone into any kind of detail.
Right.
In the graphic novel. In the screenplay, yes, they do talk a little bit about it. You know, like, if you're so smart, you know, these smart people were the ones that destroyed the world, you know, kind of lines like that. But we don't talk about that in the graphic novel. And so what we have is society, civilization is starting to recoalesce around the casino cities of the Southwest. And we have the Dog Eaters, the Black Dog Clan, in these armored caravans going between the casino cities. And in this story, they're going to establish their a base on the Gulf. So it's kind of like it's coming to the end of the Wild Wild West, kind of like that. Like in the original Wild Wild West, you know, the times that the white hunters started killing the buffalo and the end, pretty much the, you know, the end of the American Indians, it's actually a very, very short period of time.
Right.
You know, it happened so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so 175 years is, you know, enough time for, you know, these things to start building back into something different than just this total chaos and, you know, apocalypse.
Right. I mean, your artist is able to paint the picture that is so, it draws you in. I mean, when I look at it and I think about so many things when I'm looking at the art.
Yeah. There's so much motion in those panels. Yeah.
And it's just fascinating, the look and feel. Talk about when you found the artist, how happy were you with the final product?
Oh, when I saw his sketches, the initial sketches, I mean, it didn't go translate exactly into the story itself, but it was like, wow, this is great. I don't have to look any further. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, I saw a couple and he was the guy, you know?
Right. I'm pulling it up right now. I mean, I'm on Dog Eaters right now. And I'm just we're showing some of these pages. It's just fantastic.
Can you make it bigger, Sam, or no? That's the biggest it gets, right?
Yeah. I'm going to have to move it onto the screen.
Hold that's on. Fine. Yeah. That's dogeaters.com, right?
Yeah, I got
it. Dogeaters-manga.com.
Yes, yes. Manga.com, yes. Yeah, I'm going to move this out there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the artwork is great. Now, when you were collaborating with him, the scripts that you sent them, how was it, how hard or easy was it to transfer it from screenplay to comic book format? Or did you just say, here's a screenplay, let's make a comic?
Well, that's the thing, too, is like... when we started, the Dable Brothers was still the, you know, like a publishing company. Mm-hmm. You know, it felt like they had staff. Sean J. Jordan was their editor. And so I met him in LA and we were talking. And then when got the award, I go, okay, so how do we go about this? Let's get this thing on the road. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of like nothing. So I just, you know, contacted him directly and said, here's the script. and he adapted it. He was doing adaptations at the time for the Dable Brothers, and he would send it back to me, and I would revise it.
Gotcha.
And we'd go back and forth like that until, and it was pretty fast actually. I would say in a month, maybe even that fast.
Damn.
We were able to get it done. And then in the process of getting the art and all that stuff, it constantly revising it, you know, constant revision, because writing is one thing. And then, you know, how many times did I revise that script, that screenplay? And then how many times did I revise the comic?
Right.
It's just like this constant, you know, like you were saying earlier, like fitting it into the frame.
Right. Because now you got to go from like dialogue on a screenplay to like dialogue on a page. And sometimes you have to cut some of that stuff out to not cover the images on that page.
Absolutely. And pictures tell a story as well, you know?
That's right.
So you don't have to,
like that picture.
That comes
right now. That's amazing. Sorry to cut you off, Malcolm.
No. But like, in a screenplay, you know, you're relying on the reader to be able to create the picture. But in order to do that, sometimes you have to put more words. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you actually see the picture, you know, you can take away some of those words.
Right.
Reading, you know, how many people actually read these days?
Yeah, right. No, you're right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's a challenge.
This is a large screen print. It's large. We screened this, my friend, John Carr. At that time, he was, doing street art, a lot of street art with people like Obey, you know,
mm-hmm.
The guy, Ferry, Shepard Ferry, mm-hmm. and did a show called Yo Peace, which has happened, you know, the first Gulf War.
Right.
And I had a lot of street artists. And then he's a screen printer. He was doing a lot of screen printing. So this is based on, these are actual artwork from the book that we grayscaled and you know, did the screens. That's Tracy. She's sort of the heroine. She's the daughter of Lamont Black Dog, who's the leader of the clan.
It's a great piece.
Yeah, all of it is.
We have some. We have some new merch as well. I can give you that link, or did you have that link? No.
No, I don't have that link. The new link that you're talking about.
I'll just grab that for you.
Yeah, that looks beautiful.
I'll send it to you. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and you know what? You know, I mean, Guillermo Angel, incredible, incredible artist. Ruben de la de Vela and Michael Bartolo, those are the colorists on the book, right? Is it just another chapter?
Those two guys were Glasshouse Graphics. Do you know Dave Campidi and Glasshouse Graphics?
I don't know.
Oh, he has I want to say stable, but that makes him sound like animals. But he has artists, a lot of Filipino, South American, and also colorists. Those two are Filipinos. They did the first issue or so, and then maybe two issues, and then Guillermo's friend did the rest, and then also Guillermo did the color too as well.
Jeez.
And then lettering was done by two guys, Bill Tortellini.
Mm-hmm.
He's the East Coast guy, and Dave Lamphere, who is he's kind of well known, I think, as a letterer. So basically, it was kind of like almost like a regular
kind of indies publishing thing. Like you were talking about, you know, doing your own stuff. And so it's sort of in between that and, you know.
Yeah, no, I got you.
Marvel and DC kind of thing. That I would say it's that level of production.
And we talked about it even before you came on, how, you know, certain things, and including the lettering, can really hurt the artwork or hurt a page. Coloring can do the same. Like coloring can really affect the page in a negative way, as well as look at this beautiful page right there, enhance it. And I think you found a very good team of people to kind of complement everything you guys are doing. I mean, it's just, this is an incredible looking book. And it's a graphic novel, right, Malcolm? Is that how you're selling it, or can people get independent issues, or how do you sell the book?
It's a graphic novel through AnyOneWorld, ASAP.UK, but I think there might be stuff floating around Antarctic Press. Uh-huh. Did 6 issues. Antarctic Press, see if I have any.
This is beautiful.
I don't have them. I don't have them. I have... I have Gable Brothers. I have Gable Brothers. I have, but the Antarctic Press, it pretty much identical to what the Gable Brothers should have done.
Gotcha.
And that came out pre-pandemic. And so, there's been a lot of this. Actually, this is like the 5th or 6th try for Dog Years, I'm telling you. It's like, you know, first Gable Brothers, then Sea Lion Books. Then we did some digital with Media 1111. I put it out independently. And then this is through ASAP and AnyOneWorld. So, I mean, this is what it takes to be independent. You know what I mean? It's just like a constant struggle of being an unknown.
Oh, yeah. And you got to hit the pavement, and you got to hit it hard, and you got to keep going and keep moving. Malcolm, we're running a little out of time, but I just want to let everybody know, let us know where we can get all of this incredible artwork. And we're going to have you back on the show, because there's just so much to unpack with how much you've done, that we'd love to have you back and just talk a little bit more.
Sure. Anytime.
We have more time. But tell us how to get Dog Eaters, where to get it. And give us your social media handles and all that other fun stuff.
Should I send it to you then?
Yeah, we'll have it on the show notes. But if you want to just let us know where you can get some of that stuff, so that people know.
Okay, so AnyOneWorld, ASAP.UK. I think you go to ASAP. It's kind of like a little bit of a disconnect between those two sites, but it's Paul Hayden. That's Paul Hayden's site.
Okay.
And I gotta update my. I gotta update. dogeaters-manga.com. it's more like it has all that artwork that you were showing, and it has kind of like a little bit of what I'm doing now. There's also some merch up on I have a Shopify site, but it's not easily found. So you need a direct link for that. It's not. Yeah.
And we're gonna have all of that information in the show notes for everybody. But Malcolm, thank you so much for coming on. Good morning. Thank you for coming on early in the morning, your time. But thank you for hanging. And we definitely got to do this again. Thank you so much for coming on. Absolutely. Have your email. We're going to get in contact. So we'll definitely have you back.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks,
Sam, George.
You too.
Take care, man.
All right. That was Malcolm. This is another episode of Catch the Craze podcast. Thank you guys so much for following us. Again, the links are in the summary. Head over to hit the links. Go over to dogeaters-manger.com. And the artwork is fantastic.
It's incredible.
And get yourself a copy, man. And go check out ASAP Comics. Again, the links are in the summary. With that said, if you like this episode, give us a thumbs up. Please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Recommend it to a friend. And if you're not able to watch us on YouTube or any of the other video streaming platforms, we are also available on iHeartRadio, Fanboy, Spotify, and Pandora. So give us a rating. Let us know what you think of the show. Any specific guests you would like us to have on the show, let us know. If you have a topic for the Crazy Nintendo List on Mondays, hit me up. If you have a book you'd like me to feature on What's in a Box on Thursdays, let me know as well. With that said, don't forget, Disney in My Toilet is currently live right now on Kickstarter. If you haven't done so already, head over there and pledge. It is fantastic. There is so much to offer. And don't forget, Wonder Duck launches May 4th, the day after George Medina's birthday. So go over and check it out. And that's all I got.
That's all I got. We're going to be live next week, so make sure you check us out. And that is it.
Yes, with that said, I'm Sam the Crazy Man Vera.
George the Dreamer Medina.
And we are
out. It's just easy. It's not.
Crazy. Acquiesce.
No, I was talking about my friend Acquiesce. I met him.
Say my name. Say my name. Right?
This is what you were thinking?
Oh, he described me. He said, I'm the
Catch the Craze. You're listening to Catch the Craze. You are listening to Catch the Craze.
You're listening to Catch the Craze.